coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
It's like we found a way to bring peace down to Earth for at least one day.
The Rainbow Family Gathering brought thousands to Wisconsin last year. So where are they now, and how are they dealing with COVID-19?
So we called a conference call and talk about if it really is a good idea to have a Rainbow Gathering this year.
Plus, he and his resonator guitar need no introduction.
Now take a look at the big house.
Charlie Parr shares his life
bigger
and music.
They really need it.
And our news roundup and NPR's StoryCorps goes local.
My name is Amelia Lagarde, and I'm here with my inspiration and a role model.
All that after this. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington.
When I go down that funeral road, Lord, I'm gonna be dressed up fine.
And that's the unmistakable music of Charlie Parr, nice one of the region's best-known performers, originally from the home of Spam. We'll catch up with Charlie later in the show.
Let me wear that suit right now.
Also, you've heard the touching StoryCorps segments on National Public Radio. Now, the team has added local voices to the mix. But first, in what clearly seems like a different world, can you believe it was July 4th week in 2019 that the Rainbow Family Gathering held their annual event right in our own backyard?
So much emotion and love that's here. We do this home, it's like we found a way to bring peace down to Earth for at least one day.
That was not just a year ago, but a pandemic away also. And the idea of 4 to 6,000 people congregating in the woods seems almost impossible to imagine. But if federal officials have spent years trying to thwart the Back to Nature group to no avail, COVID-19 may have succeeded in severely diminishing their attendance. This year's gathering was slated for Riggins, Idaho, but saw deep divisions among members who pride themselves in having no leaders. I spoke with two who attended last year's gathering in Wisconsin, one who did not attend this year, and one who did. We begin with Finch.
My name's Adam Buxbaum. At Rainbow Gatherings, I go by the name Finch. And this week, for the first time in 11 years, I did not attend the annual Rainbow Family of Living Light Rainbow Gathering. And it's because it was a very difficult year with all kinds of controversy, with difficulties in terms of pandemic and also with our relations with the local tribes near the gathering site in Idaho.
Right. And the Rainbow Gathering is described as a tribe, but the tribe that you're referring to is actually the Nez Perce?
Some people call the Rainbow Family a tribe. I personally don't choose to use those words because I think that it might be diminutizing to people who are from actual factual tribes. The tribe in question is known by the government as the Nez Perce or the Nez Perce, but their name for themselves traditionally is the Nimiipuu.
But a recognized Native American tribe.
Yes.
Right. So what's the issue with the tribe?
Well, the gathering, the place that it landed ended up being a place near Riggins, Idaho, at a place called Hell's Canyon. And the meadow that was selected for the gathering to happen ended up being of some cultural sensitivity. It had some traditional medicines that the Nimiipuu people harvest still, and it also was near a historical battleground, and so there might actually be bones buried under the site, and that's an issue of extreme cultural sensitivity. One of the issues is that there was not a good enough channel of communication between the people that were working on this gathering and the people in the Nimiipuu.
And normally, I should say for anyone who didn't hear our program last year about your gathering in northern Wisconsin, normally you get 5 to 10,000 people. So if you were to meet anywhere, that would
clearly be of concern to them.
Very much so, and especially since the media and the local police and the Washington, D.C. police, the National Incident Management Team, usually come to store owners and tribes and anyone else that they think might be nervous about a gathering coming and fill their heads with huge numbers of people. 20,000, 30,000 people are going to descend onto your small town.
So this year, though, because of people like yourself who did not go, what was the count?
Different news sources reported different numbers of people. I heard people on the land saying 150, 600, 300. I believe on July 1st, the U.S. Forest Service put out a press release saying that there were slightly over 500 people there that day. So I'd say anywhere between 150 and 600 are the reported estimates at peak.
Now, I saw some of your discussions on Facebook with the go and the don't go sides, and they were, at the very least, we could say heated.
Yeah, some of those discussions definitely got a little bit heated, and some people, including myself, may have stooped to using sharp language that was not our highest selves. A lot of people that I really love and am close with got called all kinds of nasty names by people on the other side of the political divide about this year's gathering. It started off as deciding whether or not it was safe to attend a gathering during a pandemic. Indigenous issues had not even really been at the forefront of the conversation yet. And so there was a crowd of angry people, some of which who didn't believe that COVID-19 is real, or that it's a virus, or that it's as fatal as people believe, or that it's as contagious as people believe, etc. They were some of the most vocal in supporting this gathering.
And again, your name is the Rainbow Family Gathering. So this is a disagreement between family members. Is that correct?
It could very much be seen that way, yes. The Rainbow Gathering is, to many people, a huge family reunion where we see the people we've been missing since last year. And it very much resembled an inter-family squabble, right down to the politics of, oh, don't believe him, he did this thing 8 years ago at the picnic.
In other words, the whole family discussions that are going on in this country of don't bring up so-and-so or a certain president or whatever to Uncle Bill, right?
Very much like that. And in person, we're better about it. You know, on the internet, it's easy to argue with your uncle about the racist dog whistling meme that they posted. In person, we kind of get to understand, that's my friend that we shouldn't talk about libertarians with. That's my friend that I shouldn't argue with about how much bleach to put in the hand wash.
Is there anything that you have heard that make you feel like maybe you should have gone after all?
Well, I wanted to, I guess, talk for briefly about the conference call that we'd been having every 48 hours for the last, 114 days now. It began as just a check-in for a lot of people who saw society collapsing all around them in the middle of March and weren't quite sure what was going to happen. You know, we didn't know at the time if we were going to go into a police state, or if the internet was going to go down, or the electricity. I mean, things were really scary. So we called a conference call so our friends could report what we were seeing around us and check in and talk about if it really is a good idea to have a rainbow gathering this year. And if we didn't think so, well, what could we possibly do to try to prevent it from happening or minimize its impact? And that's a really confusing question because we are a family of, shall we say, rugged individualists who don't take orders well from others.
Right. It's like looking for the leader of a group of anarchists.
That's literally what it is, yeah.
Any memories of Wisconsin that have become more nostalgic looking at what's going on this year?
You know, in Wisconsin, we had a vision council at the end of the gathering to decide where to go the following year. And we ended up coming up with the list of national forests that were mostly in Idaho. And it's more striking to me than ever that six people in the circle stood aside and said, I don't feel comfortable with this decision. I don't want to be part of it. And now it kind of seems like this ominous foreshadowing because I've never seen a vision council with a consensus reached with so many people standing aside from the decision.
That was Finch, an attendee at last year's Rainbow Family Gathering in the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest, who sat out of this year's event in Idaho. I also spoke with Paradox, who attended both last year and this time as well.
We are talking to Paradox, the name that you use during the Rainbow Family Gatherings, which includes this year in Idaho. So where exactly are you?
Well, we're about 18 miles outside of Riggins, Idaho, which is in between Boise and Lewiston, Idaho.
Okay. And actually, first of all, I should say, welcome to Simply Superior.
Great. Thank you so much.
So there was a bit of controversy over, and I guess that's the understatement of the year, right, for the family gathering. But over A, actually having a gathering anywhere this year, and then B, where you did have it. So what led you to attend after all?
Well, for me, the thing that attracted me to Rainbow Family of Living Light is the lack of leadership and the lack of hierarchical structures and people that saw themselves in charge. I was raised in a extremist Christian cult, and I ran away from home when I was 16 and lived on the streets. And I was always terrified of cults and terrified of power structures, people that were looking to control and dominate. So one of the things that attracted me to the Rainbow Family was the ethos that we were all equal, and that there is nobody in charge. And so our longstanding tradition has been that we do things by consensus, 100% agreement of the people who are present, the people that are on the land. And so what happened this year was, is a group of people tried to get on the internet and get on conference calls and decide from halfway across the world how other people were going to pray.
Okay, and I spoke with Finch about this, and I likened it to a family squabble that we seem to have a whole bunch of these in this country right now.
Indeed, and my approach to this, throughout the process, and my wish and my prayer in all this was for unity and for the family to come together through this and not further fracture. And so I really hope this is something that we can put in the past, and that next year we can all come together without any division, and have our prayer for peace with the rest of our family.
With the diminished numbers, do you think you succeeded in coming together, or is there work to be done?
The gathering itself was really beautiful, and it was the first gathering that I've been to where there were no serious medical emergencies. There were zero injuries, and so it was about 500 people. But what a lot of people appreciated that were newer gatherers that perhaps had only been to a few gatherings was the lack of what we call name brand kitchens. And people that have acquired a status within the Rainbow Family and kind of view themselves as above other people. And so what happened this year was a lot of people got to plug in, a lot of people got to learn new jobs and new things without somebody being there to say, no, you can't do that, that's my job.
So overall, how does this year compare to last year in Wisconsin?
This was my favorite. I've been to four or five annual gatherings and 16 or 17 regional gatherings. And out of all of those gatherings, this was my favorite. I think so much knowledge and experience was gained by allowing people to make mistakes and to learn from their mistakes. And, the love and the peace and the family vibes were definitely there.
That was Rainbow Family Gathering participant Paradox speaking to me from outside of this year's event in Riggins, Idaho. So with COVID-19, did those who attended practice social distancing? Paradox estimated about 70% did not, though some of those included people who came to hide in the woods for most of the event. He said those serving food wore masks, and about 10% of others did at other times. Paradox also said relations improved with members of the Native American Nez Perce tribe, though we were not able to independently confirm that before deadline. And lastly, neither Paradox nor Finch should be considered spokespeople for the Rainbow family because there aren't any, though the song "I'm Going to the Woods" by Dharmica Music pretty much captures their viewpoint. We'll be back after this.
I'm going to the woods. You can't talk me out of it. I'm not scared of COVID. So I'm going to the woods.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Charlie Parr is one of the best-known musicians to come out of Austin, Minnesota, and one of the best-known musicians in his adopted hometown of Duluth. He's also well-known for playing the resonator guitar, which I'll let him explain for the uninitiated. Last month, he live-streamed from Allianz Field in the Twin Cities for the George Floyd Memorial Fund, coming less than 2 weeks after Mr. Floyd's tragic death while in the custody of Minneapolis police. He's been doing the same at other venues, including Superior's own Cedar Lounge Tap Room at the Earth Rider Brewery. And when there's not a pandemic going on, he performs all over the country and planet, including Australia and New Zealand. He joins us now by phone from Duluth. Welcome to Simply Superior.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So before we go to what you're up to now, I wanted to hit on your roots just a little bit more. And can you tell me what else Austin, Minnesota is known for?
Austin is a smallish town in south central Minnesota that primarily is centered around the Hormel plant, meat packing plant. They make Spam there. That's pretty much what happens there.
Right, right. So, of course, I perfectly well knew that. This whole idea was to get you to say Spam before I did. And
you're
I've got to ask you if you've ever played the Monty Python song Spam.
I have not. No, I didn't. You know, it used to play on a loop. Maybe it still does. at the Spam Museum in downtown Austin.
Right, but they never asked a hometown boy to come back and do his cover, right?
No, I think the Spamettes might cover it, but at the, because you know they perform it a few times every year at different outdoor events in Austin.
Uh-huh. All right, well, I promise you I'm done with Spam, not necessarily done with Monty Python though, so.
Excellent.
The other one is the resonator, and how about your definition, if you could tell us what the difference is between a resonator guitar and a regular guitar?
Well, in a nutshell, a resonator guitar is more like a mechanical speaker than anything else. It has a spun aluminum cone that is reminiscent of a pie plate, and you have the strings stretched over that cone on a bridge, and the vibrations are going to amplify that just exactly like a speaker does.
Mm-hmm.
It was invented initially in 1927 as a way to make the guitar louder because jazz bands with horn sections were drowning out guitar players. So it's really the precursor to the electric guitar.
Hmm.
It was had a really short kind of life, 1927, till probably 1937 when they started to fade away because by the late 30s and early 40s, electric instruments were starting to become available. The jazz community didn't really take to them as much as Hawaiian guitar players who liked to play slide on them and blues guitar players. They were, loud enough that you could play a resonator guitar on a busy street corner and you would have the upper hand in busking every single time. With a resonator guitar, it's at least twice as loud as normal kind of wooden guitars.
Right. So I found this clip on YouTube, which is graciously shared with us by Adam Antall from Blues Willis, showing the difference in sound between an acoustic guitar, and that's this one, mm-hmm. resonator guitar, and that's this one. So what brought you to the resonator?
I got my first guitar when I was just around 8, and I was attracted to playing guitar because my dad had in his record collection 3 blues records, and Mance Lipscomb, Lightnin' Hopkins, and Albert King. And I listened to those records just to death. The Austin Public Library had a really, really good collection of music on the second floor. You could check out records. I checked out the Harry Smith Anthology of American Folk Music, and I checked out a record, I think it's called The Father of the Folk Blues. It's a Son House record, and on the cover of the Son House record, there he is playing a National resonator guitar, and I could not get that picture out of my mind. I drew pictures of it in my little notebook. I went to the music shop and asked Bill Apold, the guy that ran the music store, I said, hey, I need one of these. And he's laughing. They haven't made those in years, and you can't get one of those. So I was desperate for a long time until I was in my late teens, and I was in Minneapolis and at Willie's American Guitars, and like I think the first year they were open, and they were just kind of a little hole in the wall, and they had one. And I sold the things that I had and borrowed money that I couldn't pay back to get this guitar, and then it was the only guitar I had for a decade, and that's all I wanted to play. And honestly, since then, that's the sound that I kind of want when I pick up a guitar. That's what I expect it to do. So I don't own a regular wooden guitar, a regular wooden 6-string guitar. I have 12 strings, which is a totally different animal altogether, and I have resonator guitars. And recently I started trying to learn how to play electric guitar, but the sound that I think of when I think of, like, you know, when I think of writing a song, for instance, and I think of the sound of the guitar in my head, I'm thinking of the sound of a resonator guitar.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Charlie Parr, one of the best-known musicians in Duluth. Let's listen to some of your music. How about starting with Love is a Unraveling Bird's Nest, if you could set that up for us.
Sure. This is one of the songs that I'm actually very, very happy with. I'm not really 100% sure what it's about. I don't think it's about birds. I think it's more autobiographical than that. But, you know, this last year has seen some changes in my personal life with a divorce and, you know, kind of the usual kind of feeling around in the dark to decide what to do next. And mm-hmm. Maybe it's about that, but I don't know.
And not to mention the entire world changing, too, on top of that. So,
right. Well, there you go. There's that, too.
Right. All right. Love is an Unraveling Bird's Nest by Charlie Parr.
Let it rain, my house won't collapse. Let the wind blow just as hard as it likes. But hunker down and watch between the boughs. Bend and sway with the storm. And in the morning we'll see the sun. In the winter we'll all be gone. I'll fix the broken door when we come home. Gather up all the unraveled parts. Put them right again and sweep away the leaves. All of the dying snow. All of the dying snow. Falling to straw upon the ground and carried by the wind until it's scattered all around. Now you might never notice it, but when it's forever gone, love's an unraveling bird nest falling to straw upon the ground. fires come, we'll surrender and move on. Gather our branches in another town. Find our place in the highest part. To our new neighbors we'll nod and shake. Borrow and share and give away. It'll all come back to us one day. It'll all come back to us one day. Seasons come to an end. Can you even imagine that? When the wheel won't turn again, that's when we'll be still. That's when we'll be still. Tree that sways, and all of the broken parts will be replaced, so we can look through the boughs for all our days, watch the wheel turn, watch the wheel turn.
That was Love is an Unraveling Bird's Nest by our guest, Charlie Parr, who joins us by phone from Duluth. A lot of performers we've had on the show during the last few months have been doing their living room concerts and streamed across the world. You got Allianz Field and real live venues. How's that been working?
I've been very, very grateful for those opportunities, you know, to play at all. When the pandemic, you know, kind of came around, I was on the road heading through South Dakota when Mark, my manager, called and told me to turn around and go home.
I know. Everybody's got a where were you then story now.
Right. And, you know, I've done a few, you know, the live streaming things. I'm not much into the social media and the technology. So it's been a little, the learning curve for me is steep. Mm-hmm. I've been really grateful when, like, Allianz, you know, they did that for me. You know, I just showed up and played the guitar, and I didn't do anything technically at all. And
right.
I was really grateful to be able to perform in any capacity. And so the chances that I have nowadays, I've been doing socially distanced outdoor live shows in Superior at Earth Rider Brewing. And it's been great. It's mm-hmm. been really nice to be able to perform again.
And so you've been hitting the Cedar Lounge lately. I thought for a second one of the other songs we have coming up from you over at the Red Cedar was about that, but it's not.
No. That's actually more about where I grew up. I don't remember exactly when I wrote it, but it's always kind of been about Austin. Austin has a couple of smallish rivers, I guess you call them creeks, but the Red Cedar goes right by the packing house. And there was a postcard that used to be sold in Austin. I actually have one. It's a picture of the packing house with the river in the foreground, and the caption is over the Red Cedar. I guess it's just a song kind of dealing with, you know, when I was a kid, and the high school was kind of, I don't want to say it's rough, but it felt bleak to me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to stay there, and I didn't want to work at the packing house. And my dad, who worked at the packing house all of his life, was very much encouraging me not to work at the packing house. So I think it's maybe got to do with that.
All right. Well, here's Over the Red Cedar by Charlie Parr. Not the Cedar Lounge in Superior, but the Red Cedar River, or creek, if you will, in Austin, Minnesota, his hometown.
bigger than they really needed. He got the dualies on his pickup when the dealer gave him a choice. Then he lost the job on the build site. Now he's a struggling to feed his boys. And the red cedar grows and the red cedar flows, and long after you're gone, it's outlasting you.
That was Over the Red Cedar by Charlie Pard. You were saying how your father worked at the packing house, and there's a pretty good article, at least I thought it was good. If you thought otherwise, that's fine. In City Pages, I read about you mentioning showing up in Duluth, looking for somewhere with a cheaper cost of living. Did we turn out to deliver on that? Or?
Well, I moved from Austin. I dropped out of high school in the early 80s and moved to Minneapolis. Moved to Duluth in 1999, looking for a little bit cheaper place to live, because by then Minneapolis had gotten to be too expensive for a person who just plays the guitar and has odd jobs here and there. So,
right.
Yeah, so Duluth was it really, you know, and still is, I find it to be a really, really good place to live. I find it to be kind of inspirational, and you know, I feel like it's my home, and I don't have any desires to go anywhere else. You know, it's a really good city, and yeah, it's getting kind of expensive too, but I'm not really sure that that's, you know, just happening in Duluth. You know, I have a room in my ex-wife's house, but it's worked out pretty well, because I still get to spend time with my kids, and mm-hmm. You know, it's just kind of cheaper all around. So at least at this point, I'm okay.
Well, you know, that sounds like something you'd find quite often in Duluth, so you should be not too worried about that. You've got a performance coming up in, I'm forgetting the town, in Wisconsin. So, again, it's in August. Is that hoping that the pandemic subsides a bit by then, or is that another one live streaming?
I've got a few shows in August, and I think I've got Oshkosh and I think Madison. Everything right now is liable to get canceled, depending on how the pandemic goes along. What I'm doing is, you know, just kind of booking stuff with promoters who are, you know, they're trying to figure out a way forward, doing shows, thinking about, you know, social distancing and thinking about people's safety. And if they can pull it off, then I'm super happy to go and play.
Mm-hmm. Well, I said that I wouldn't give any more spam references, but I might give another Monty Python one. And I have to say that your song, I Ain't Dead Yet, evokes to me anyway, the Bring Out Your Dead scene from Monty Python. So what was the impetus for I Ain't Dead Yet?
I Ain't Dead Yet is inspired heavily by Doc Boggs, a banjo player from Norton, Virginia, who wrote, I think he wrote it, I don't know, either that or it's a very old traditional song called Roses While I'm Living. And Roses While I'm Living is that same sentiment of, don't do all this special stuff for me after I'm dead. You know, tell me about how you feel about me right now. When my dad was diagnosed with lung cancer and then died about 4 months later, that's an event that kind of made me travel back in time in my mind and think about opportunities that I had, you know, to spend time with him, and that I had failed to do that. I think that's a natural response to a loved one. The song is equal parts kind of Boggs and my relationship with my dad and what he told me. I mean, I think his fingerprints are on there as mm-hmm. much as mine are.
I Ain't Dead Yet by our guest, Charlie Parr, who we've been speaking with, sheltered in place in Duluth. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. It's been good talking to you.
When I go down that funeral road, Lord, I'm gonna be dressed up fine. I'm gonna have me a nice new suit and tie like I never could have afforded when I was alive. Well, I ain't dead yet. Let me wear that suit right now. I ain't nobody gonna see it when I'm locked in that box underneath the ground. Lord, I ain't dead yet. Give me my flowers now. Play all my favorite songs. Well, they plant me in the sand. Ah, but I ain't dead yet. Let me hear that music now. There ain't no way I can hear it when I'm locked in that box underneath the ground. Lord, I ain't dead yet. Give me my flowers now. Everybody gonna have nice things to say. They're gonna say, you know, he was a good egg. Yeah, even if don't really feel that way. I mean, I ain't dead yet. Tell me what you think right now. You can't look me in the eye when I'm locked in that box underneath the ground. Flowers everywhere. All my friends are gonna send some just to show how much they care. And I ain't dead yet. Let me have them flowers now. There ain't no way I'm gonna smell them when I'm locked in that box underneath the ground.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hey, Robin.
And our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, Danielle Kading. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So it was really great, I have to tell both of you, to speak with Charlie Parr. One of his concerts that was scheduled for August is for the Moon Dance Festival in Gleason, Wisconsin, which is a little north of Wausau. But like so many others, it's been postponed until next year. But the show is going on in another venue near Wausau. Danny, you know something about this one?
Yeah, it's an outdoor rock festival in central Wisconsin. I believe it would be in the town of Easton. And it's been dubbed the Herd Immunity Fest. So it's kind of like a reference to, you know, the area's cow pasture type setting. And also herd immunity is when a majority of the population would be immune to COVID-19.
In theory,
yes. And so they're saying that about 2,500 people are expected to attend this event, and that's happening against public health guidance. Because, as you know, large gatherings can lead to further spread. And, you know, this prompted a couple of bands to pull out of the event. Right now, though, it's still moving forward. As of next weekend, they're planning to still hold the festival.
Hmm. I understand they're not returning too many phone calls, though, and particularly about the name Herd Immunity Festival.
Yeah, my understanding is that the owners declined to comment about the name and the health precautions that they would take to protect fans and the artists that would be performing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to remind listeners once again that Charlie Parr is not scheduled for that event. And again, he says that he very much would be part of events where both he and the audience are safe. State officials may not be buying the herd immunity idea either, and some are pushing for requiring masks.
Yeah, actually, Dane County became the first to require masks or face covering in any indoor public space, and that'll take effect this coming Monday at 8 a.m., and they've issued an emergency order that requires masks for anyone 5 and older, and the only exception would be if, you know, that person is working from their own home, but the requirement applies to all of Dane County. And Milwaukee is also looking at possibly having a mask policy in place that will require people to wear them indoors and maybe even outdoors. They're discussing that right now. And in Superior, one city councilor, Esther Dahlbeck, would like to also see a mask requirement because she's concerned about the recent surge in coronavirus cases here in Douglas County. where we've seen the number of cases double in a two-week period. And that's related to visitors from outside the area with high infection rates coming to Superior, and also the at least 8 bars that people attended while they were showing signs of the virus here in the city.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the whole thing that some are attributing higher cases or higher number of cases to greater testing. That being said, the tests will actually have to be tabulated, and that wasn't necessarily the case with some in Iron River.
Yeah, actually, the Wisconsin National Guard apologized this week after 142 samples couldn't be tested for the presence of COVID because they were left behind in a hot vehicle. The National Guard says that this was an honest oversight by troops, that it was just overlooked during the transport of these samples to a Madison lab for analysis. And so they're saying they want to make it right, and they've scheduled another testing event for Friday in Iron River.
All right, I do not joke about this, but can I call this a hot topic? Before you answer, Brooks, let's move on to you. It seems that no matter how much science there is out there or warnings, there's still a belief that younger people can still weather through the virus. But we're beginning to see evidence to the contrary locally.
Well, we are seeing a big uptick in folks in their 20s in St. Louis County, largely in Duluth, who are contracting and spreading the virus. While county officials have said there's no real single source, there's no outbreak, we are, you know, like at bars in particular, we are seeing just more spread among younger people. So far, St. Louis County has reported more than 200 cases of COVID-19, and this week had a single day high of 15 new cases and has recorded, as of Thursday, 16 deaths.
Well, again, the severity of it. And it continues to affect the economy. Our shipping industry is taking a hit, I understand.
That's right. Nearly 100 crew members from 3 massive Great Lakes vessels are being laid off as the ships are laid up because there's just not enough taconite being produced to be shipped to keep those folks employed. It's a supply chain that's been disrupted from the beginning by automakers halting production. And then that drop in steel demand, of course, means less demand for iron that is shipped through Duluth. The 94 employees, many of them don't actually live in the Twin Ports region, but they are based here in Duluth at the Key Lakes facility.
Mm-hmm. Once again, a reminder that all our economic issues and our social issues are interrelated. We've been speaking with Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks so much, Robin.
And you can read the stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/North Report, and be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. We've also been joined by my colleague, Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
And finally today, if you're a regular listener to National Public Radio, you're likely familiar with StoryCorps, a series of conversations with everyday people, or sometimes well-known people having everyday conversations that are nonetheless moving and offer an insight on the humanity we all share. The StoryCorps team was in the Twin Ports to record some of those conversations in collaboration with the Duluth Superior Community Foundation's Opportunity Rising initiative, a program that can inspire all of us to reach for our goals despite adversity. Here's the first of those local conversations between Amelia Lagarde and Rebecca St. George, who share a bond as members of a running group of Anishinaabe women.
Gichigami gapoikwe Anishinaabe winikaz. Neen makwat and dudam, neen gichi onigamina donjabwa. My name is Amelia Lagarde, and I am here with my inspiration and a role model.
Wawate kwe indigenakaz. My name is Rebecca St. George, and I am here with my inspiration, Amelia, which I'm just going to jump right in. Can I do that?
Yeah, go on.
So the way we know each other is through this running group, the Kwe Pack.
The pack is made up of a bunch of us Anishinaabe women who carry a lot of trauma, and we need a healthy way to like process through that.
It makes me think of times that I've been on the trail and I've just been crying and I have to stop because I can't breathe while I'm running and crying at the same time.
Yeah.
Which doesn't happen every time, obviously, but That certainly
it does.
Does yeah. happen. Yeah. It's a good thing. I would love it if you would talk a little bit about how running helped you after you lost your baby.
Hmm. We want to talk about grief?
Yeah.
I found out I was pregnant in October. Months go by, and eventually we get to a place where the baby is gone and there's no more heartbeat, right?
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that, and I think you must know this, but I had lost another baby before that.
Yeah.
And I didn't talk about that baby. And then that other baby, the one that I never talked about, that baby was just taken and put away, and I drank a lot.
Mm.
And that's how I dealt with that hurt.
Sure.
And this baby that I lost at the time, I have Naomi.
Right.
And I couldn't do that, right? Like, I couldn't fall apart like that, and I couldn't live that life because I still had another life I had to take care of.
Right.
And so, like, what's a healthier way to deal with that? And what's a healthier way to work through those feelings? And you talk about, like, stopping running because, like, you can't breathe because you're crying. I can sit here with these feelings and my chest tightens. But when you're running, like, there's a purpose for that. There's mm-hmm. a purpose for those emotions and those, like, physical reactions that then can get worked through. Running lets that energy that's inside, that, like, trauma that my body's carrying, get out in no other way that I don't think it could.
Yeah.
That was the local StoryCorps conversation between Amelia Lagarde and Rebecca St. George, speaking about the healing they get from their running group of Anishinaabe women. It's presented by NPR's StoryCorps team and the Opportunity Rising Initiative of the Duluth Superior Area Community Foundation. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with the music of Kate Bush, What Else? Running Up That Hill. Stay safe, everyone.